When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Let's all go to the lobby.
We have always had, since the day we settled here, a gentle understanding with the creatures who live beyond our borders. We do not stray into their woods. They do not come into our village. I have always pictured them in some ways as our protectors. They have allowed us to live here, nestled amongst them in this untouched place.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Lobby, a podcast that lives here on the Real Lovers podcast feed. And we are continuing our M. Night Shyamalan retrospective series. Take two. I know it's been a while since we released an episode, especially with everything going on in the world, but we actually recorded this months ago. And I just want to let the listeners know that it was my fault. I accidentally deleted the episode on StreamYard, so joining me today again is the lovely Vikash, host of the Cinema Pursuit podcast. Vikash, welcome back to The Lobby, where we're talking about The Village, directed by M. Night Shyamalan.
I'm glad to be back again. Yeah. It's all good, man. Let's dive into this one, man, because I know we both have an interesting relationship with this movie. It's an interesting movie for me, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting movie, and I specifically remember I rewatched this movie before doing this recording again, but the first time we did this recording, it was a first-time watch, and I remember having a very distinct kind of, like, experience, like, when watching this, and now we'll get into it, like, how I feel about this movie later on. I still think it's a great movie, but some of the things that happened in this movie are quite telling, especially for the events that we're going through today.
But you wouldn't say.
Yeah. But like I said, we're talking about The Village, released in 2004, written, directed, and produced by M. Night Shyamalan. I'm going to read the synopsis here from Letterboxd. When a willful young man tries to venture beyond his sequestered Pennsylvania hamlet, his actions set off a chain of chilling incidents that will alter the community forever. This movie stars Bryce Dallas Howard, Joaquin Phoenix, Academy Award winner Adrian Brody, William Hurt, Sigourney Weaver, Brendan Gleeson, and Judy Greer.
Bro, you acting like this man Adrian Brody didn't have an Oscar back then.
Yeah, not sure.
For that movie with that person I don't want to mention.
Yeah, there was. I feel I always forget about that movie because it should be forgettable at that point. But it
my problem is watching movies that bring up a lot of pain or not. It hurts. I don't like talking about them. I'm like Zach wanted to talk about After Sun on the pod, mm-hmm. like for Cinema Pursuit. I was like, nope. I respect the movie, but I cannot talk about the horrifying presence of that movie. I'm like, it's not for me.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it in forever, but yeah, Adrian Brody was also in this movie. This movie was also shot by the king,
the goat,
Roger Deakins.
Team Deakins podcast plug.
Team Deakins podcast, shout out. And then also James Newton Howard coming back for another go around. So you start really seeing the usual suspects, especially with M. Night Shyamalan, within these first few movies that we're covering on this series. And like this movie had a budget of $60 million and grossed a worldwide box office of $256 million worldwide, $114 Jeez. Million dollars in the U.S. So,
and it's crazy that not that many original movies get made, and they don't even make that much money anymore. Mm-hmm. You talk about all the movies that Nora is an independent movie, $6 million. It did not make that much money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but also that's people are always asking, like, all the time. I don't think we actually talked about this on the series just yet. Is that everyone's, oh, M. Night Shyamalan, he's mid. How does he keep making movies like this? But $60 million on a 200...
There's an audience.
Makes $256 million. He's funding his next movie, like, right there. So that's why he continues to make movies.
And on top of that, when he was down and out, when they wouldn't give him money, he went and made the found footage movie with the kid in the oven. I forgot the movie's name.
The Visit?
It starts with a V. The Visit, yeah.
Yeah.
He made The Visit, made some money, and then flipped it into Split, flipped it into Glass, and, like, mm-hmm. just made a ton of money.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's the ultimate bet on yourself. I know mm-hmm. what I'm doing, and I can get people in the seats.
It's the true artist mentality, where it's, I don't care what anyone else says. I don't care if no one listens to this podcast. I'm going to continue through this series and continue making the art that we love. But yeah,
there is a business side to it, man. You still got to make money.
True.
That's the whole point. That's
still good. Money is nice, especially in the year of our Lord 2025. But
money isn't everything. You need money, but you can't let money run your soul. And that's for anybody.
Exactly. But yeah, I think the thing that really sticks out to me for sure is the $60 million budget. That's been, like, standard for M. Night Shyamalan, but, like, the sets are, like, he built, like, an entire village. Like, he basically just went out to, like, the backwoods of Pennsylvania and just built, like, all these sets and just created this community and bonded with all these actors, like, on set. But it's, but go ahead. Sorry.
Pat from mm-hmm. the commentary podcast, Pat Brennan, he mm-hmm. actually is from Pennsylvania. And mm-hmm. when they were kids, they actually went to the sets mm-hmm. and they saw the sets for the village because they lived in that area in Pennsylvania. So it's one thing I do always appreciate is mm-hmm. M. Night. He actually still goes to the place where mm-hmm. he was born or I guess raised, or he lives still and he makes movies there. It's like, the mm-hmm. equivalent of me making movies in Savannah. I don't need to be here for any other reason because I love this place. That's all it is. And he shows love to that place constantly to the point where in Deli Boys, show mm-hmm. on Hulu, fantastic.
Yeah.
There's an episode where there's a gangster and he has all of his prized possessions. Mm-hmm. And one of the prized possessions is M. Night Shyamalan's first iPhone.
That's funny. The iPhone that was.
It just goes by and then it, like, pushes in on the iPhone. It's like something, like, holy, I'm just like, this is hilarious.
The iPhone that was probably featured in The Happening, right?
Yeah.
We just recorded that episode that will come out later, obviously. But that was, like, one of the first iPhones that was ever featured in a movie at that time. And it's featured in a really interesting way. But yeah.
He's ahead of the curve.
Exactly. He's always ahead of the curve. But one of the things that really stood out for me, like, that M. Night Shyamalan talked about in the behind the scenes is that he wanted to work with, like, theater actors. Like, I mentioned the cast, and it's just because one thing that really stood out for me, like, in The Village is that there's a lot of long takes, a lot of just actors just acting. And he said that he wanted to work with theater actors and also doing a period piece. He liked period pieces is because during that time where The Village is set is, like, people are very innocent. People were very, like, naive about what is going on. He like that mentality to set around, like, a horror movie / romance.
But what you're actually talking about is mm-hmm. you say what it actually is ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the end of the movie, we figure out that these people are being ignorant to what's happening in the world and would rather live there.
Yeah.
Because they call it simple. They call it bliss. But the ignorance causes that bliss.
Yeah.
And that's the point of the movie. And that's the big question.
And, spoilers for the movie, obviously. Like, that's
If you listen to this, it is a 21-year-old movie.
Yeah, it's a 21-year-old movie. You haven't seen this movie, pause this podcast and watch the movie and then come back. But that's really the whole twist of this movie, is that Shyamalan builds up like this romance, sets it as a period piece, and then flips it on its head, and it takes place in present day. And it might actually be one of M. Night Shyamalan's greatest twists, like in his filmography, to be honest, because I feel like I thought it was going to hinder the movie in some sort of way, but I think it actually makes it better, to be honest.
It makes it better once you know what it is. But mm-hmm. when I was first time, so I watched the movie in November, whenever mm-hmm. we were going to do this. And before that, I had seen the movie when I was probably 8 years old. So 2004, 2005, mm-hmm. I found the DVD. I literally would go through every single DVD in my public library. Mm-hmm. Me and my brother would be like, okay, this looks cool. Let's take this. Watch the movie, put it back, whatever. But on this DVD, it said the scariest movie of 2004. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, let's get to it. Ooh. And it was not scary. Mm-hmm. So I was like, what am I supposed to do? I was just like, my expectations were wrong. Mm-hmm. And wrong expectations to a movie like this, you're not going to see the vision. Mm-hmm. So it's like rewatching it all these years later, knowing what the twist is, knowing how people like the movie, I'm like, oh, let me see what I can feel from this. And yeah, the twist hits now, but mm-hmm. it did not hit when I was a kid. So I understand some people, if you have the wrong expectations, this not working, but mm-hmm. longevity wise, it definitely worked.
Yeah, we'll get into it like when we get into the breakdown of the movie, but that's like the thing that really hit for me, like the first time watching this, like a few months ago, like when we first recorded this podcast, is the thing that tripped me out is when all the stuff that goes down in that, like, that final act, Ivy basically prevails in everything, and then it's a subtle jump cut, and then you hear a siren, and you're just like, what? Huh? You do a double take, like, what's going on? What kind of movie am I watching?
It feels foreign to see the road that she comes up upon. Mm-hmm. Asphalt? What is this futuristic technology?
Yeah, exactly. But it's an incredible twist, especially even if you already know it, just because of everything that you experience throughout the entire movie. But that's also like something that I noticed on this rewatch too, is that The Village is a very tight movie. This is something that I've really grown to love, like when doing this series, is that Shyamalan is very meticulous, like when he's making his movies. He storyboards every single shot very meticulously, and also working with Roger Deakins, those two are like a match made in heaven at this point, because you got the best person that can set up a shot and also the best person that can storyboard a shot, is like, that's a match made in heaven. Everything that you see needs to be seen. That's what Shyamalan wants here, and I think it benefits the movie, because you get invested in these characters, you get invested in this family. You want Lucius to find love and be successful on his end, and also you want what's best for Ivy as well, and also what's best for the entire community, because they're being threatened at this point, and until the end, when you find out like these people are brainwashed in a way, quote unquote, just because
it's a chosen ignorance. Yeah. And it is brainwashing yourself. Another point of his meticulousness is because every single one of his movies he's directed to this day, every single one of them, he has been writer, director, producer, every mm-hmm. single one of them, especially producer when it comes to conciseness. Mm-hmm. He's just like, you've written your movie, that's one movie. You direct your movie, that's one movie. And then when you get to the editing, that's a whole other movie, right?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. he's there through the whole process, and he always knows what he's doing. And we were talking about Oppenheimer this week, and great production designer on that, Ruth DeJong, and Hoyta Van Hoytema shot that, another legend. Mm-hmm. And they working together, they built a set. And they're like, we shot out this whole set. There was not a single part of the set that was extra. There's mm-hmm. not anything we didn't use. We used every single part. And we built it correctly. We didn't need to do anything else. It was literally perfection. Mm-hmm. That means they didn't waste any money. They didn't waste any time. And that is the business side of making these movies and coming in on budget on $60 million. Mm-hmm. So he knew what he was doing. There's a reason why the studios were giving him all this money. Mm-hmm. Number one, people came to see his movies. Number two, he knew how to use the money, come in on budget. There's differences. There's, like I said, there's the artist side and the artist's business side. And mm-hmm. M. Night has known how to do that his entire career, even though, you know me, I don't agree with his whole filmography, but yeah. I respect the game.
Yeah, you respect the game. I like that you pointed out editing there. Like, The Village was also edited by Christopher Tellefson. Yeah. He was nominated for an Academy Award for the film Moneyball. And that's those two films are very different, but what they're
Moneyball both coming out, set up a pursuit soon. Literally. No, that's but side, real quick side note, Bennett Miller also sits in on his edits pretty hard. Mm-hmm. Like Foxcatcher, they were editing for a year. He was like, I literally didn't know what to do with this movie. Mm-hmm. That's how far he gets into it. But yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, those are completely different movies. But when you think about it, Moneyball and The Village are pretty similar just because they're both movies with a bunch of talking and cutting back and forth between each actor and making sure each character has the right amount of screen time. And just, I don't know, I feel like the same sort of muscle was probably used from this editor, but from The Village from 2004 to Moneyball to not present day, but right around present day. But yeah. Do you have any more kind of like fun facts about The Village, Vikash, that you want to mention?
I want to just talk about just in general, because mm-hmm. I am the South Asian that is here. We talked about it on the other one that mm-hmm. this man does not put South Asian people in his movies beside himself.
Yeah.
You don't count. Mm-hmm. And it's the quote that he writes it off. He says that as a joke. He's like, my dad told me, like, put white people in your movie or whatever. They'll be successful. And I'm like, come on. In the Lord's year of 2025, we can do better.
Yeah.
It's not like, and even he produced, like, Trap is the first movie where it's like, we had a South Asian character and it's his daughter. It's like, yeah. We can do better. And I understand if there's no actors or something like that, mm-hmm. but that's not the case. And as I understand, you want to make your money, mm-hmm. you should at least have them in supporting roles if it's not your lead role. So I don't agree with him. Mm-hmm. And I don't agree with a lot of people making content, making movies, making shows from South Asian perspective. They have Deli Boys. It's a good mm-hmm. show. But would I make it? No. Trap. All of M. Night's filmography, would I make that? No. But that's the whole point, is we have all sorts of different perspectives. Number one is representation on screen. Mm-hmm. Number two is like the stories you're telling. Mm-hmm. So there's never a through line to like his culture. It's like, how am I supposed to, I'm not going to sit here and judge his, like how he feels about his culture, but it doesn't feel like he has it within his movies. And I feel like if I wrote something, mm-hmm. it's a part of me. It will be shared.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I remember we were talking about this on the previous recording, and it's solid, but like this movie did come out in 2004, and representation wasn't where it's at to this day. But I think
This is the one movie you couldn't argue for it because it's supposed to be this olden time.
Yeah. Yes,
if you cast anybody else, that twist doesn't work, right? Mm-hmm. It's the only movie where he has a reasoning for it.
And also, I feel like he holds, going back to what you said, that Shyamalan writes most of his stuff. Writes all of his stuff, directs all of his stuff, and produces all of his stuff. He takes a great amount of pride. And I'm not... since you're the only South Asian on this podcast, but if I was South Asian and I saw someone like M. Night Shyamalan's name like pop up like in 2004, I don't know if you were inspired by that, but hey,
no,
that name looks like similar to mine, or he's got that same heritage, so it will motivate you to do what Shyamalan is doing, to make the stuff that you want to make. You see what I'm saying?
The perspective is that as any minority mm-hmm. in a majority, you have to take, you have to, number one, practice empathy more than majority will mm-hmm. have to. And then number two, whenever you get little breadcrumbs like mm-hmm. this, you cherish them more than you might need mm-hmm. to. And as if you sit here and look at the little bit you have, you don't see the path forward as to how much you can actually become. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say 2025, I'm not worried about what he's made before. I'm talking mm-hmm. about what he's going to make, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, just because you put your daughter in a movie, you're promoting your music, right? That's what it was. Mm-hmm. And it's like, even then, it's, come on, like, you got more to do. But I'm gonna let him do him. I gotta do me, right? I gotta go do it for myself.
There's an episode where we go into that on how he's come to that solution, but we talked about it in Glass. That's later down the line. We just recorded that episode. But I'll let you listen to that. Let the listeners and yourself listen to that episode, because I think we come to a pretty interesting solution where Shyamalan is at in his current career. Yeah. But also, I said I'm looking at my notes. I don't want to counter like what you said about he needs to put more South Asians in his movies, but it goes back to Shyamalan's
dialogue. No, I'm not worried about if he does.
Yeah.
That's on him. I'm just saying it's an issue.
it is an issue, but I think Shyamalan has a ton of pressure, because I think he knows what he's good at. Like, when writing, he's good at having characters interact with each other and discover each other over time. He's not good at dialogue. He's always been not necessarily the greatest at dialogue. And I feel like he doesn't want to do that to his people. He doesn't want his people to say these kind of stilted lines of dialogue. So what better way to have white people to say it is because they deserve some human humiliation every now and then. But maybe that's just a theory. I don't know if he thinks like that, but yeah.
It'd be hilarious if he did.
Yeah, and also this is just how he imagines white people talk too, like in The Village and stuff like that. This is
me. What I imagine is the sound is like, it's just Southern accents to me when it comes to the voices.
Yeah, just stilted Southern accents just coming
through. I don't know if you've been on TikTok with White Lotus. There's a clip of the lady from White Lotus saying a bunch of just like random words. I'm forgetting them right now, but it's hilarious.
Oh,
like Charlotte.
I haven't watched season 3 yet, White Lotus.
No, it's just like she was doing an interview and she was like, oh, I'm doing a North Carolina accent. So she's like giving sample words.
I know what you're talking about. But I think M. Night Shyamalan is doing South Asians a favor by not. He does that. And then I feel like, I don't know what he did with Airbender, Last Airbender, where he's just like,
that's where make
him all the villains.
No, that's where I was like, oh, I'm excited. Mm-hmm. You're talking about, oh, there's one of us. I was like, oh, we have an Asian behind the camera. He's mm-hmm. going to understand these themes that Avatar explores. Mm-hmm. But then it all went out the window.
Yeah,
I don't know what the situation was with the writing, but the themes themselves from Avatar, from Last Airbender, were not there. But it ain't my movie to talk about.
Yeah. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. I'm afraid to cross that bridge because I haven't seen that movie since its release. I saw it in theaters, unfortunately. But shall we get into this breakdown of just The Village?
Yes, sir. Let's dive in.
Yeah, let's dive in. So, setting the scene, we establish like on this isolated village, and there's just these people like living amongst each other. It starts off with this dinner, right? The dinner. And it features, you want to say who it features? I think you mentioned this and it caught me, but
I don't remember.
I missed when I called, when I mentioned like the people who are in this movie. He just won an Academy Award for A Real Pain.
Oh.
Jesse Eisenberg.
Oh, wait. Oh.
He's at the dinner table.
He's in this movie.
Yeah.
He just went in. I don't know if he won anything. I haven't watched the Oscars either. I've been in India, so I don't know.
Well, yeah. I don't think he won. I think he was just nominated. But I totally forgot he was in this movie when they're just like setting the scene for that. And I'm like, oh, this is Jesse Eisenberg just randomly in a non-speaking role. Should we pause?
Where?
All right. All right, continue. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Eisenberg is great in this movie, and he has his one little moment where he's playing the game with his friends and by the fence. And I think Deakins composes him so well, like mm-hmm. just with the composition of the shot. And you can see the town in the back, and he's being lit by the fire, and he's scared that the creatures are going to come out and get him. And mm-hmm. it's a great tension. And I'm glad that Jesse's gotten behind the camera, because isn't he good at it? I haven't seen Real Pain yet. It's mm-hmm. one of my movies I need to catch up with. I've got about 35, but that's one of the ones I'm excited to see.
Yeah. You definitely need to see it, but I just like,
he's not the only one though. You know that, right? The guy that, Bryce Dallas Howard's character, the main character mm-hmm. of the movie, Ivy, her sister, played by Judy Greer, she gets married to somebody in the movie, and the guy that she gets married to actually ends up being a director himself. He made a movie called Mass in 2021. Jason Isaacs, who's on White Lotus right now, he's in that mm-hmm. movie. It is actually a fantastic movie for anybody to go check out. So it's always good to see those little, you never know who becomes like a big director. Talk about Brady Corbett. Like he that's what he did. He was like from small actor to being big at the Oscars.
Shyamalan, like you said, he's ahead of the curve. The way he gets like all of these actors before he sees something in I hate to bring it up again. He sees something in these white people that other white directors aren't using them.
Spielberg says that majority of his job is casting, and that's mm-hmm. the truth. Is that if when you cast somebody, there's an intention behind it, right? We mm-hmm. sit there and we've recast on with Cinema Pursuit on my podcast mm-hmm. all the time, and half that job for me personally is that who do I see doing that character just as well, if not better, in my opinion. There's so many examples of just like the casting dictating what your movie's gonna be, because it's like if you put a person in the wrong role, mm-hmm. it sticks out like a sore thumb. I don't know if you've seen Valerian from mm-hmm. 2017. The main actor, Dane DeHaan, he's mm-hmm. saying dialogue where I'm like, this is not meant for you. This is terrible casting. You're a great actor, but this is not your role. So yeah. It's like you can tell those things right away. Brendan Gleeson, William Hurt, they're in this movie. They are fantastic in this movie in their mm-hmm. respective roles. And they own it because that's just the actors they are. They're mm-hmm. consummate actors no matter what they're doing, whether it's the comedy or the drama. Because mm-hmm. Gleeson knows the comedy too.
Yeah, especially like from what's the Irish movie that came out a few years ago?
Oh, you're talking about Banshees of Inisherin?
Yeah.
I was thinking of what he called Paddington, because I was rewatching Paddington 2.
Yeah.
Coming on to the Pursuit with Marley.
Hey. The goat movie.
That's another movie we need to talk about in our era, just like The Village.
Yeah. But yeah, I love this opening sequence because Shyamalan is perfect at just setting the scene and getting the audience like familiar with these people. You see, everyone gets equal screen time. You get a little bit of Sigourney Weaver. You get Adrian Brody kind of doing his best Adrian Brody impression, especially if you've seen his best actor win this year's Oscars. It's just, he's very
unhinged. No, just I go think... to his Instagram. Go to his Instagram. I'm not even joking.
I didn't know this was a thing until
someone told me. And they're oh, he just goes for walks and he talks. And I'm like, okay. I don't know.
You can't force me to do that because.
Okay, real quick, I want to round back because I missed a great one. Bryce Dallas Howard is a director now. And yeah, her dad is a prolific director, but like she's been directing on Star Wars. And mm-hmm. if I had to choose one person to give her $200 million to make a blockbuster action movie mm-hmm. right now, Bryce Dallas Howard is on that list because she owns that work and she put in the work with the episodes that she's made. And that's another talent right there.
Another talent, also another Nepo baby, like you said. Like,
yeah.
Maybe yeah, does yep. she get like those directing like jobs if she wasn't Ron Howard's? Like Ron Howard, who also directed another Star Wars movie. So it's...
And how did she learn? You just say, "Oh, I'm Bryce Dallas Howard. I'm an actor." And on top of that, my dad is someone people love. So it's like I shadowed him. You could shadow anybody and learn these things. It's like talented Nepo babies have opportunity levels that other people don't have. Yeah. So that's always worth considering. It doesn't mean to to invalidate their talent, but it should also be something that they accept that they are of a higher opportunity value.
Yeah. But
all that aside, back to Village.
Yeah. I think she does a really great job in this, Bryce Dallas Howard, because the character that she has to play, character Ivy, she's blind in this. And you get that immediately because of the way she's walking with the cane, feeling her way around. But maybe you can help me out a little bit with this, but her character also being blind from the outside world because of what we know from the twist, where it's blind to what is happening around her, just because of what's told, of what she is told to be should be seeing. This is how the world should be, even though this is what the reality of the world. But so, and I feel like she brings a sort of innocence to her innocence and naivete to this performance, because she is curious about what is going on after we get the introduction to this community and family, not to bring that word up again here on this podcast, but it really is a family, these people interacting together. We start seeing these attacks happen throughout the village, and really interesting use of color. Shyamalan loves to play with color in his movies, how red is prominently used throughout this entire movie, showing a sign of fear, a sign of the unknown. And the first attacks are was it a dog that got skinned? Gruesome. I can't even imagine watching this as a kid. You said you watched this as a kid.
It didn't bug me. I'm not gonna lie.
I was squeamish as a kid, and I'm still squeamish now, but it's really gruesome. And I just like the way Deacons also shoots these death scenes, because they just pop up and they're just oh, how did this get here? And you're just
wondering. What's interesting though?
What's up?
It's something I just thought of that we didn't talk about last time.
Yeah.
Is that it's a parallel to the reveal of the movie that they are perpetrating fake violence to keep the people of the village in the village, that they are running from violence to this village, but they're also perpetrating violence to keep people there. Well, it is, no matter where you are, there's an inevitability of change, of destruction that is going to happen.
Exactly. And not that we're probably going to bring this up multiple times, but doesn't that sound pretty familiar of what we're going through? Escaping oppression, a certain group of people escaping oppression, but also attacking each other from the inside.
I didn't even hear what you said, but yeah, I don't.
Exactly, no, I was saying America, you have these certain groups of people thinking that they're oppressed and going to a secluded area to live off the grid or live what's amongst
the
themselves. Problem?
It's the same thing. You just mentioned family, that these people are a family. They want people, one community. Number one, people need community and they need reason. They need responsibility as to how they need to live, and they need a responsibility as to the people they're living for. Yeah. And when people do not have that, and if they don't have the means, this becomes a easy way of grasping onto people's frail emotions and translating it into something where if they're angry, you take their anger and you are pointing that gun to a certain direction to make it go off. And they might not even realize what they're doing because they are so far into thinking that they have been dismissed when they have not been dismissed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But I love the escalating fear throughout this entire movie of all these attacks going on. And also, it's what's interesting that Shyamalan also plays with throughout this movie is that you see, I think were they teenagers or whatever, or the kids that were tempting these creatures.
Jesse Eisenberg and then Michael Pitt. Yeah.
Yeah, where they're out in the dark and they're just, oh, I think the creatures, I think they call them those we don't speak of, in the movie, because you don't speak ill of the things we fear and stuff like that. But I like the way that they're just like, they prop themselves up in the dark, and it's like a game of chicken in a way. Where, yeah, where it's, if you can survive like this long, you're not like, it's what kids do. It's,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Being trapped in the closet. Oh, okay. Let me pause real quick. That's what the pause feature's for. But yeah, do you want to comment on that? Like what I just said about the whole Jesse Eisenberg and Michael Pitt, you said?
Yeah, Michael Pitt, he was in Murdered by Numbers, among some other things. Mm-hmm. I Origins from Teen. Interesting actor. Doesn't really get much work, but interesting mm-hmm. stuff. But the thing with it, like even with the kids, when mm-hmm. you're talking about the fear of the creatures, right? That's another thing that these people went from fearing for their families, and then they moved to the village, mm-hmm. and then they're using the same fear to keep them there, to keep them sedated, mm-hmm. to keep them not thinking. And it's these kids are just being kids, and they're taunting things that they don't even realize that they're messing with. If that was a real, because you spend the first, I don't know, 80% of the movie thinking that there is an actual fear mm-hmm. out there. And as if there was a fear that real, would you really be tempting and taunting them? But like you said, it happens in real life. Mm-hmm. Where it's, I wouldn't let my kids play with toy guns, mm-hmm. especially outside of a house. But it's, people still let their kids do that. And we've yep. seen real situations where these things have transgressed into other people murdering kids. And mm-hmm. it's like, why would we put ourselves in situations? But it's, then I'm just, I feel like I'm reading into it too hard. But yeah, it's interesting.
No, it's interesting too, just because M. Night Shyamalan does this a lot with his movies. I've said this before numerous times, it's very Spielbergian of him, and that's, I feel like that's like how he gets like that Time Magazine, I think, article where it's like the next Spielberg, and it's just M. Night yeah. Shyamalan just looking majestic.
In the cornfields.
Looking majestic, but M. Night Shyamalan loves to like view movies through children's eyes, and like here, like the Jesse Eisenberg scene where they're taunting like the creatures, like that, this is like what children do, like they take like yeah. fear, what normal people see as fear, and children yeah. just, let's make a game out of it. Let's like the whole
it's a chicken game.
Yeah, exactly.
And but, yet again, people playing with guns. I know a kid who shot himself in the foot doing that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's a very realistic thing, and you should always include realistic things in your movies, even though Shyamalan has like a line of disbelief with the dialogue and everything. You should have those things that ground your movies too. And
yeah.
including children, teenagers, younger people should always be a must, in my yeah. opinion, because there's something there to add tension to your movie. And they most definitely add tension to this movie, because yeah. that scene, even though you know what's going on, it's still a nerve-wracking scene.
Yeah, for sure. Like you mentioned, like adding stuff to a movie to ground it, like we mentioned, like with the kids, Shyamalan also yeah. does that by grounding it in this really heartbreaking and also just heartwarming love story. Like yeah. this movie is scary, but also there's a love story kind of very deep into it between Lucius, played by Joaquin Phoenix, and Ivy, Bryce Dallas Howard. But
looking at the movie now, mm-hmm. it's more, I'd say it's an attempt, I wouldn't say it is, but it is an attempt at like gothic romance, where it's like you have these supernatural or horrifying elements, but mm-hmm. at the base there is a love story, mm-hmm. and that's what runs the movie. So it's, that is the basis. Like I said, I didn't know that as a kid. Mm-hmm. I love romance movies, but I didn't know. But now it's like, oh, I like this. This is interesting, where it's, these two are pretty much meant for each other, but you mm-hmm. see the opposing forces of Adrian Brody at work also.
the opposing forces of Noah, that Noah is just, like I mentioned before, Adrian Brody is just doing his best impersonation of himself as Noah, because he's just completely,
and by the
unhinged.
End, what is he doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, by the end, he literally becomes the creature. And I know we're jumping ahead a little bit, but what I love most about this movie is the love triangle kind of between like Ivy, Lucius, and Noah, just because that's what drives this movie, because it's just these characters like interacting. Noah, very unhinged, almost a little bit reminds me of someone like in my younger days. It's just like forces like himself upon someone, so it's just trying to make it happen. And Lucius is just like, you can love me. And yes, I'll be heartbroken, but I'm not necessarily going to beat myself up about it. I'm going to let you choose. And that's like what I love most about this movie is that, like, when Lucius gets stabbed by Noah, like, that's it. I love that it's Ivy that goes on the journey to get medicine for Lucius, because in any other movie, like, that would be, it would be like, especially a Disney movie, it would be Ivy that would be injured and Lucius would
getting
be like
stabbed.
Lucius would be the one like, oh, I gotta save you or something like that. For example, Frozen's a little bit more, never mind. I forgot how I'm Frozen actually works. Fan, so
you're fine.
Yeah, but I'm gonna edit Frozen that out.
Is exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's my problem with Frozen is exactly what you're talking about. Is it's a movie trying to pose as a feminist movie, but it is not. Yeah. And if I could see that in 2013, I don't know why everyone else didn't. At that point, I expect better for women. Like, these stories need to be told in a better way. And especially after Tangled, which was, they flipped it on its head and she's awesome in that movie. But
yeah,
back to the village. I do want to say that the movie does, like, Ivy goes off and does this, but the whole movie, the entire movie, I have been talking pretty negative, but the whole movie's theme is romance. It is love. It's not just romance. It's real love. What will you do for the people that you love? What does love cause you to do? Where it's, is it going crazy for a girl? Is it stabbing a guy? Is it moving to a village, escaping from your sorrow? What are you gonna do? What is your, and then, like you said, what does Ivy end up doing? She ends up traversing and trying to go and get medicine to save the guy that she loves. And it's all about love ultimately. So it's definitely there.
Not 100%. Right. And not to promote any of this, but love is actually really blind in a way, because it's like, it's one of those things. It's not trying to promote that horrible Netflix show, but honestly, really, this is like Ivy, like I mentioned, she's blind like throughout the movie, and you don't necessarily need to see like what someone looks like. It's like how this person makes you feel. And I feel like, especially like in the shots of this, like any interaction that Ivy and Lucius have, whether it's like the first attack of the creatures where she's out there waiting for Lucius to come back, because Lucius is like there. I think it was the first attack, right?
Yeah. I know the scene you're talking about.
Yeah. She's standing out on the deck waiting for Lucius to come back. She holds out her hand, and beautiful shot, absolutely beautiful shot of Deacon's framing the creature like in the background. And then you see Lucius's hand just come up, and she knew that he was going to come back no matter what. And everyone's saying, come back inside. It's the fear. It's the fear that's bringing everyone inside. But love is what's bringing Ivy out, because this is the person that she cares about the most in the world. I love that scene so much. What do you think of that scene? So,
no, it's a great scene. And the, like you said, the blocking in this movie is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think he makes certain choices that I wouldn't make, but I do respect him.
Yeah.
And especially if Deacon's there, he's going to be like, yeah, I got you. Let me do this. Hold my beer. I got this.
It's funny because I listen to a lot of movie podcasts, your podcast, Cinema Pursuit, and I listen to my own podcast sometimes, especially when editing. But most movie podcasts, they always talk about how great Roger Deakins is and how he's the GOAT. I just want to, maybe this is a call out, I would want to listen to those podcasts that don't think he's the GOAT. Like, I want to know like their take, just because I don't understand how you could have a possible take where Roger Deakins isn't necessarily the greatest cinematographer of all time.
I ain't heard it yet. I think we're every time we do these sorts of things, where we're putting objective reasoning to subjective art. And it's, I think my greatest compliment I can give any cinematographer will always be that the way you shot your movie makes me see the world in a better way. And there's a few select, maybe 10 cinematographers that do that. But the first two or three that have done it and keep doing it for me, number one, Roger Deakins, number two, Hoyta Van Hoytema, and then Emmanuel Lubezki, TiVo,
Yeah. Those are three that have always done it for me, whether it's like Tree of Life, whether it's The Village, Jesse James, Bring It to Skyfall, anything that Deakins does. Throw it back to Shawshank. I was watching Shawshank voyeuristically on the plane. I was watching someone else watch Shawshank instead of watching my own movie. And I'm sitting there without any audio, without any dialogue, watching just the shots, watching the editing, watching the pacing of it. And you can see the genius behind it. And it was awesome. I will say that's a good update for this episode, because that conspired recently.
Yeah. But yeah, I would like, maybe that's a call to action too. If you don't think Deakins is the GOAT, let us know in the comments down below, or I don't know, stitches on TikTok.
If you want to find me, just I'm available on all platforms. Come talk to me. We can talk it out. I'm not going to dismiss you.
Yeah.
I actually like talking to people.
Yeah, we're not going to dismiss, as long as it's a intelligent and intellectual conversation / debate. But yeah.
Talking about Deakins, we should also talk about the lighting. I was talking about the scene with Jesse Eisenberg and the guys outside taunting the creatures.
Yeah.
And the lighting there is fantastic. There's at the beginning of the movie, our Brendan Gleeson's character is drunkenly sitting at a fire, and Noah, Joaquin Phoenix's character, comes up to him, and the whole lighting of that scene is fantastic too.
Lucius.
Not Noah, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm jumping ahead.
You're good.
But Lucius comes in, and there's this beautiful fire, and I know that Deakins, he has a thing of showing light sources, but he also doesn't like lens flares. So he's always very good at framing things and how he shoots them. And he does it so you don't see the artifice. And there's certain directors where they're like, oh, I want you to know there's a camera there. Lens flare, this or that. You feel the camera's there. There's an intention behind it. But Deakins never does that. He always has a subjective view, but it is also an omniscient view of the scenes and how they're unfolding. So...
yeah.
Love his work.
Yeah, I love his work here, especially in The Village. And like I mentioned before, Shyamalan loves to play with color. So does Deakins, too. And I think, like I mentioned already, red is like a symbolism for fear and also gold. Like,
yeah, the gold, yellow, yeah.
The yellow goldish robes. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is how I read it. It was that those were like a sign of warmth and being safe, because the robes were... like when they were going out into the dark, like into the woods, that's the way that they could feel safe. That's especially towards like when Ivy goes out to
try to get the medicine. Yeah.
Like she has like the gold robes to protect her from these creatures that they fear.
She has the protection of love on her side.
Yeah. Love's on her side too, as well.
That could be the physical manifestation of love, is that color. And it's the fear, the negativity. Is that red, the forces at hand that are trying to hinder, not meaning always negative, because the forces, if you use fear, you're maybe trying to do something positive, but the tool that you're using is red. It's still red because you're trying to do something. Because your tool, it becomes negative ultimately, even if you have good intentions.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about another color? We do, like I said, the candlelight. Deakins always uses a cool, specific orange color in his movies, anywhere from that, Jarhead, Skyfall, 1917. You see it his whole career that he uses a specific color, and it works every time. And it's because it's a natural color. Because it's like, it's almost orange, but there's also a white there. And it's, if you look at fire at any extent, there's always a white there.
Yeah. So, no, and also, like you said, like the whole Brendan Gleeson like shot, like where the fires, he's being lit by the fire. Like that is, like I said, it's a feeling of warmth. It's a feeling of like safety. Like Gleeson or the people around him felt safe here because around the light, like they feel at home, they feel comfortable away from these beings. I just think it's shot really well with that symbolism right there. But moving on a little bit, we're jumping all over the place a little bit, like we always do, Vikash. Is there anything that I'm missing? We talked We talked about like the relationship between Lucius and Ivy. We jumped over a little bit about Noah, about what happened.
Yeah.
Like to Noah and Lucius, like Noah is obviously jealous that
you're talking about the editing. Mm-hmm. One of the best edits of the movie is is the sound and the edit, the shots, everything mm-hmm. just working perfectly when he does stab him.
Yeah.
And it's wait, hold up. We go subjective for a second and we're like, oh, is this man really did that?
Right. And
it just, it takes you for a spin because you don't expect him to do it and he really does it, right?
No, you don't expect him. You don't expect Noah to like stab. I wouldn't call Lucius a friend of Noah, but he's part of the family.
Yeah.
And it's
so it's an elevation.
Yeah.
And it's, they're like I told you, they're running from violence, but violence ensues. It is a translation of feelings not being resolved.
Yeah. And like I don't think I've hated on this podcast about Adrian Brody. He's not one of my favorite actors, but I love this reaction from him when he stabs Lucius, because it goes back to the whole innocence and naivety of Noah's character, where he's acting from a force of like anger, like an emotion of like anger, just because Lucius has what he doesn't have, but he also cares for Lucius too. And it's like going back to what you said, like little kids playing with guns. And
yeah.
And like at that point, no one
I wouldn't even call it little kids. That's a real translation of you put the ability into someone's hands. Mm-hmm. And then we hear of real news of people going to McDonald's and not getting enough sauce and then mm-hmm. killing or shooting somebody or causing a scene because they have that with them. Mm-hmm. And that is a childish behavior of anger, right? That it's not resolved. You don't have the right to do that.
Yeah. And the moment, it's really, like I said, really great acting by Adrian Brody, because you see like the sadness his in his emotion. Eyes.
Yeah.
But also you see a little bit of happy, like also, but it's not like a full, it's not like full on. And then like that, like you, it cuts to him like going back, like back to the village. And he shows like his hands to shows his hands and it's red. And he was, what's the line? Do you have that written down where, but he basically, this is what we're supposed to fear as he shows like the red.
Yeah.
And really haunting like images because it's like, this guy's gone crazy at this point, to be honest. He's crazy.
Exactly. And it's like I told you, it's a great translation. It's mm-hmm. just the, and it works. It's effective that the colors come through and it doesn't feel like it could be heavy handed, but it's never heavy handed. It's done correctly.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, Lucius gets stabbed. And like we said, Ivy basically goes on a journey to get medicine, save the one that she loves. So she goes to these woods and like basically I wouldn't say battles the creature, but she overcomes her fear of what was told to her. You're supposed to fear these creatures. But it's a really good scene of her just like outsmarting these beings.
It's a mirror of what Noah just did to mm-hmm. Lucius. Yeah. That out of his, call it ignorance, I wouldn't call it stupidity because it looks like he's got mental health issues.
Yeah.
But it's like, that disconnect causes him to do that. And love is a disconnect that causes you to be brave, causes you to get over the negative environment you might be in, mm-hmm. despite those things, to go do something positive for somebody that you love. Mm-hmm. So it's her turning around and doing the same thing, but it is a different set of emotion. It's the same set of emotions, but it's a different set of characteristics, a different set of moral value in a sense for mm-hmm. what she's doing, because there's a sense of there is love, but there's also an altruistic thing there. Mm-hmm. And it's her getting over the fears, getting over her mental, her physical disability to go do something that no one else wants to do. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting situation that all the adults know exactly what's going on, but they're still mm-hmm. not doing anything about it. And it's the only person who actually does anything is Brendan Gleeson's character at the beginning of the movie. The scene mm-hmm. I was talking about by the fire. He's like, hey, Lucius, if you want, open the box. Mm-hmm. My kid just died. Mm-hmm. Open the box.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to deal with it anymore. It's like, my kid died unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. And is it worth what we're doing here? And he doesn't think so.
Yeah.
And that all leads to mm-hmm. the question. What they did, we come to the point where we are revealed at the end of her battle with the creature that we're in modern day 2004 Pennsylvania, and she does get the medicine. She goes back. She saves Lucius, and she does the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they're left with the catch 22 that now she knows what's going on. Mm-hmm. Should we keep up this lie? What is the point of all this? What do you think? Would you go live in the village?
I don't know. I think rewinding a little bit, like what you said there, like when she defeats like the beast, she finds out it's Adrian Brody getting her revenge on what Noah did to Lucius. And
I don't
also
think
just,
it's revenge
also,
though. Revenge. Mm-hmm. I'm a big revenge guy.
Yeah.
When it comes to movies, but because revenge dictates that you have a clear intention, and it was not her intention to kill Noah.
And plus, she didn't know it was Noah.
That's what I'm saying. It was not her intention to do so. Don't call it revenge.
Yeah, it's unintentional. Unintentional revenge.
Unintentional. Yeah. Yeah.
But
call it karma.
Then, like, we get the siren that basically hit my alarm bells out. Okay, what the heck? I thought we were in this kind of period piece, and then it's like modern day, like the road. And I like her interaction with that park ranger, just because she's been told like all like up until this point that people the people on the outside are like dangerous to her, and the way this park ranger greets her with warmth and just wants to know if she's okay and needs any help. He really does truly help her. He's the one that actually gets the medicine from M. Night Shyamalan. He goes back to his boss. How does that boss not see? I love the way he walks in and the mirror and M. Night Shyamalan reading the newspaper and he grabs the medicine. But how does he not see that? Maybe it's just like, that's a scenario thing. It's like the character has to get the medicine at that point. But I love that she is it's naivete like of her to just accept like this kindness from a stranger that she doesn't even know, but in her eyes, even though she's blind, she feels like his kindness and accepts like what he's gonna do for her, because at this point she's on the other side of this wall, like she doesn't know what this land's foreign to her, so she the first person that she sees, she asks for help. But I love that for sure. But what's the name of that actor that played the park ranger or whatever?
I know it's not M. Night Shyamalan.
It's not M. Night Shyamalan, but I don't know. I just think it's a really great performance from him, just because he brings a lot of warmth to the role. But yeah,
Charlie Hoffmeyer. Random cut.
Yeah, I don't know. Just a shout out to him.
Props where it need to be.
Yeah.
He is the compassion that it should be. Like, oh, I'm going to help somebody. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter who they are, but I'm going to give them help. It's like, because he's just seeing a girl come out of a wildlife reserve, essentially. That's what they've designated that area as. And they talk about it that they essentially created a no-fly zone. William Hurt's character, Edwards, is actually a person with a lot of money and buys this land, gets it deemed as a no-fly zone. It's mm-hmm. a reserve, and it's essentially just a commune, in my opinion. It's like you're just creating a fake existence that is not within the existence of this world.
And this is what really bothers me, especially on this rewatch, where it's... Because they flee just because they want to escape diseases and certain medical practices. I don't know if, since this movie takes place in present day, are these people just anti-vaxxers at this point, where they're just like, they don't want to get the shot, so they just go, they just,
you're
go
discounting commune? You're not giving them enough credit. Not because these are all people who ultimately, out of grief, mm-hmm. find themselves doing this. And mm-hmm. I think since the last time we recorded this, I think one thing about me is that things are always shifting in my head and it's always getting better. And one thing I do believe that in, you talk about this village being a family, right? That you, not just you, but everybody needs community. Mm-hmm. And the little families that we have in our places across the world now, things are different. You could be in California, I can be in Georgia, but it's the same social circle. Mm-hmm. But it's like these little pockets that we have across the world in our little villages. What are we doing with those? Do they exist anymore? Mm-hmm. Are we going to go and divide ourselves from the world to make those? There's a lot of questions to be had as to why we're doing it. And because I think that socially and economically, in my opinion, there's a reason to have villages. There's a better social interaction, a better social outcome in a village compared to a city. Mm-hmm. Because you, in any city, you will not know the person that lives next to you. You will not know anybody. You'll know a few people, but you're not going to know everybody. And those places are not conducive to knowing people and creating a familial aspect.
Yeah.
I see the merit of the village, mm-hmm. but I don't agree with the fact that you have to disconnect yourself from the world to have one little place and act like that's going to change anything. Because the whole movie, for me, says that you're just creating another place for the same exact things to happen again. That if you say that regressing is going to cause a forward moving, like, social success, mm-hmm. that's not the case here. People are not happier, because talk about my people. You go back 2,000, 3,000 years. What they were doing is they have villages. There's no kingdoms or anything like that. But socially, economically, they were stable. They were happy. They were always learning. They were always making a difference in each other's lives. That's not the case anymore. They had the caste system back then, but it's not what it was today. It's been perverted. It's been changed. It's become a village of certifying a division of people and causing anger and hatred. That's not what these systems are for. And it's like the systems we live within today are causing anger, hatred, and violence. Mm-hmm. And they thought that the way to escape that is to go to a village. No, it's not. This village ain't going to help nobody, because what happens? There's violence to keep people in check. Mm-hmm. There's violence that happens because violence is going to happen if you don't have emotions that are being in check. And they become ignorant. And it's like the whole choice was out of ignorance. Ignorance is bliss. It's a folly to be wise. And as we have to be wise about this world, whether we want to be or not. Because just because we don't see the things happening doesn't mean they're not happening.
Yeah.
I think the movie is a, to some extent, it's a response to 9/11 and this whole like movement that happened afterwards of, you get us, then we're going to get you. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to have this whole world where we're going and killing people, whether it doesn't matter who it is, but we feel the need that we're unable to take somebody else's life, then let's just escape it, because someone, my brother got killed, my daughter got killed, my father got killed. So the answer is escape? ?
It's,
in my culture, I will tell you this one thing is, things are different now. People are blindly believing things, but the old way of moving forward is, you know, the person dies, you know, you burn them, you say these prayers, you take a week, and then you must go on with your life. Because if you live in grief, there's no way to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
The resilience of the human spirit is something that should be studied. And it's our main character in this movie. She has that.
Mm-hmm.
And because she's not been given everything. She's been grown up. She's grown up in a place of ignorance. She's grown up without sight. She is physically and thematically blind, but she still has the vision and still has the power, the moral character to go and do something that is fantastical almost for her situation. So it's now that I'm telling you, now that I think of it, I'm like, the villain's got the vision, man.
Yeah, it's totally got the vision. But the thing, the reason why I did actually think about it, like I was discounting it about how these people are like escaping modern medicine. But the only reason why I thought about this, especially on this rewatch, is that, like you mentioned, like at the beginning of this movie, Brendan Gleeson's like son, he loses his son. And it's like, he, especially since now that we know like this movie takes place in present day, that is avoidable, completely avoidable. Especially, we don't know what his son died of,
but it could be the example of the flu.
Right?
You're living in a place where you don't have a modern existence of AC or heating or something like that, and a kid gets flu. Thousands of people used to die of the flu when they moved to America back in the 1700s. People still die of the flu to this day.
What's not trying to get political on this podcast, but right now what's
it's not political to say that you should take a measles vaccine. Okay. Yeah.
Exactly. But what's happening?
They have made these things. I can go and look at my parents' arms. They have these like ringworm looking circles. They literally have vaccinated this entire world. Mm-hmm. So we don't have to worry about these bacterias that can kill us. Mm-hmm. But people want to say it's about rights. It's not about rights. It's about empathy. And if you don't know how to practice your empathy, you become ignorant. And this movie is about that.
But also, these are
ignorant people going to the village.
Ignorant and also fearful people, because they're just trying
to do what hand in hand.
They're trying to do what is best for their family and the people that are close to them, but not.
But who is our family? But who is our family? What does the movie dictate? Our family is our village. Mm-hmm. My responsibility is to my village. It is not to the person who gave birth to me. Mm-hmm. It's not to the person I gave birth to. It is to everybody. I have to take care of this family first, but I also have to consider everyone else too.
Yeah.
And that sounds like a bold statement to make for some people, but that is a fundamentally human thing to do, is to have the free will and then consider myself, consider everybody else, consider that there are forces in my life that are acting upon me that I don't have any responsibility of, right? Mm-hmm. I wake up. I didn't wake myself up, but somehow I woke up, right? Mm-hmm. There's a force working upon me that woke me up, but I don't know what it is, right? And that goes into something else, but you get what I'm saying.
No, I totally get what you're saying. It's like another thing that you mentioned, that we see what we want to see and like we close ourselves off. That immediately made me think of Jonathan Glazer's Zone of Interest, another really great film that kind of works in companion with The Village, because The Village, we didn't talk about this like when we're going into like the production history of this movie, but shout out to the people that worked on the sound for this movie. Yeah. I forget, like, I was looking frantically looking up the name of the violinist that James Newton Howard used for this movie. Really fantastic score by James Newton Howard, but he specifically got a younger violinist right around the same age as Ivy. It's interesting hearing like that violin throughout this movie, because it's working in parallel with the character as the violinist is growing throughout the movie. So is Ivy. It's very interesting seeing that parallel, and also just like the whole sound of everything that's going on. You hear the creatures first, like before they attack. Just like in Zone of Interest, you hear like the atrocities, but all the stuff that's going on, it's like people are just like in the village, people are like living like nothing else is going on. They're just like blind to the outside world, which is not good. It's like, you gotta form community, but you gotta like,
I am not trying to make this political, even though.
No, it's fine.
What I'm gonna say is someone recently was making the statement that I'm not even going to say who it is, but they were like, oh, is it, you know,
Hitler or Stalin that killed these people, or is it the people, the cogs in the machine that killed these people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's both. It's not one or the other. It's everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's, you're telling me that you, this is what we're talking about, that you see injustices, and then you're going to say that, or my kid's going to ask me like, oh, what did you do? Like, you didn't think that was wrong? Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, of course I thought it was wrong, but I did what I could within my community to change that. That's the best I can do. And if I can do better, I will. But to say that you didn't do anything, or you didn't feel that way, or become ignorant to it, those are all the wrong way to approach issues of any sort when it comes to that level of violence, of hatred, of division, and zone of interest. One of the most haunting things I've ever seen is that ending. Mm-hmm. And it's like, the ignorance is personified, that the guy gets, he gets a promotion and he's going down the stairs and he looks down the hallway and he just sees darkness. And that darkness shows the future of the effect of what the millions, thousands, which grew to millions of people that were murdered, that were slaughtered. And it's, your ignorance can lead to that. And all of our ignorance is not going to lead to a million people dying, or millions of people dying, but our ignorance will lead to people dying, to people being inconsiderate. Someone was talking about sustainability, and they're like, every single thing that we do, we're literally sitting here taking up electricity, right? Someone's going to have to pay for this down the line. There's an empathy within that also. Every time I sip water, that is also going down the line. That's going to hurt somebody. The plastic I use is going to hurt somebody. We don't think about these things. I'm a vegetarian. I've always been a vegetarian, but it's by choice. Some people are like, oh, as soon as they get out of the house, they're going to start eating meat or something. It's, no, it's by choice. If I can avoid hurting, I'm going to avoid hurting others. Mm-hmm. So it's, do people have that understanding though? Mm-hmm. And it's like the understanding the people in the village have, the understanding of the people in zone of interest, I don't want to say that word right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was the understanding that they had? They thought these things were fine. These things are not fine.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even say good. They might think they're good too. And it's like, how do you even think that's a good thing to do? How does that, what is the process in people's minds where they're like flipping the Rubik's Cube and they solve it to be like, oh yeah, I should go to a village. Oh, I should slaughter these people just because they're different. Mm-hmm. I should slaughter them for their land. I should take this opportunity to go enact violence. And as you see this stuff to this day, and it's the people who literally have had this violence happen to them that are enacting it upon others. And it's like, violence begets violence. Someone has to stop. And it's, they went to the village, the violence stopped. Did the violence, I'm saying, no, they went to the village, did the violence stop?
It didn't. That's like the fastest.
And then you still have the same issues. So it's, what are you doing?
That's like the fascinating thing about like this entire movie, and what makes me love like this movie even more, just because it's in that Shyamalan just like working, like just working and trying to figure out humans. Like, that's really just any movie. It's any director introducing like human characters or just characters and having them work out their problems like amongst each other. Sometimes they work it out. Sometimes it just their problems just stay there. But I think what's interesting about the village is just how humid it is and how, like you said, like empathy. We want to care for these people, but at what cost do we make these sacrifices to care for the people that we love? But Ivy, I feel like Ivy, like she makes like those right choices. But also what you said, it's, do we still live in this village? Do we like branch out and get outside this community? Like, we love each other, but do we actually love the family that raised us and the family that we call home? I think that's what the beautiful questions of this movie asks. But yeah, and that Shyamalan was cooking when but he didn't, like, even know he was cooking at this point.
If you love these people, you're also going to let them die because there's medical innovations that have been done that are going to enable you to live longer or avoid disease, or if you get shot or stabbed, that you might live. And are we gonna see the innovations and say, no, we're not going to use those. Mm-hmm. It's if I say that if you have a faith, believe it, but don't act like science doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And it's they go hand in hand, but people don't want to believe that either. And it's an ignorance. So, and they tackle it in the movie. It very much is that. They don't mention religion, but it going and becoming of this commune, this village, mm-hmm. it becomes a religion that you chose to go and live at this place specifically.
Mm-hmm. And we didn't talk about this actor or character all that much, just because I feel like the character is just there, but
yeah,
it's important that they're there. It's Sigourney Weaver, and it's very telling for M. Night Shyamalan to cast Sigourney Weaver here, because she's very much like the mother role throughout this entire movie. She's the one. Yeah. She's the one that everyone goes to for answers, and it's up to her to set the movie and be like, and make people safe. She's trying to make people safe, but at what cost? Like you said, at what cost? Like lying to these people, lying like what is actually on the outside. And yeah, I love this movie. Is there anything else you want to add on to
all that negativity being said? The movie is fundamentally about love, mm-hmm. and that you can't just be in this world mm-hmm. and not practice love in a way where I'm not talking about like lust. Lust and love are two different things.
Yeah.
Love is about showing up no matter what's going on. And that these people, they lost their loved ones and they thought, hey, I've got this money, let's just leave. That's not the right answer. People I know, close friends, they're like, I don't want to have kids. This world is bad. It's, what's the English word? Sorry. Like sometimes my mind will always, it'll have like Gujarati words and they're better than English words. The world is embittered. The world is not worth living in. And there's plenty of people who are ignorant that are having kids, breeding ignorance.
Yeah.
And it's like, a practice of our love to this world is to keep going, and that we will continue to work on our villages in this world. Mm-hmm. Our villages are outside. They're not disconnected. Mm-hmm. Our villages are across the world. My village is connected right here through my phone, through this internet. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally, it's about people. If I could see you physically, I would prefer that. Mm-hmm. But we don't have that luxury.
Yeah.
So we do this, but it's like the human touch, the village touch is something to be studied, mm-hmm. but it's not to be taken as a division from the world. It is meant to be a apparatus of the world. It is like the alveoli of your lung. It is a little pouch that is connected to everything. It is part of the breathing apparatus of your life. This literally breeds oxygen into you. Your community matters that much. It is as much valuable as your oxygen, because if you don't have people in your life and you're not fighting for things that you believe in, especially when it comes to empathy, what's the point? Yeah. And these people lost the point. And it's, yeah, things are going to happen. Bad things are going to happen, but we can't falter in those moments. I know people who have lost their kids to gun violence. Mm-hmm. But to this day, it's been a decade, but they're still out of their love for their kids. They're trying to make sure that this doesn't happen to someone else's kids. Mm-hmm. And that's what love is, right? They don't have to go and take all their time to do that, but they choose to do that because they have a love for this world. Mm-hmm. And that's the other side of the village, is that translation of love. So
yeah,
go with love. I don't know what else to say. Jesus, that's all we talk about. That's why I am grateful that this is the one movie we talked about, because
yeah.
this is thematically his heaviest movie. And I wonder if people recognize that. I didn't recognize it for all these years. I was ignorant to it, mm-hmm. but I learned and I'm getting better. And we can all learn and get better. That's all I got to say. It ain't none of my business. It's your own business to go and improve yourself. So we're all better human beings in our little communities across the world.
That's beautifully said, Vikash, as always. You're always really great at those monologues and those closing thoughts. But this is also what I love about The Village, too. It's a human story, and humans are complex. Humans want, like I said for multiple times throughout this episode, humans want what's best for each other. Like, but
the way they go about it is different.
Way you go about it, it's not just the people, like you said, the blood related. You want what's best for your blood related family. It your family, not to quote Vin Diesel, your family is larger. But
I like, got friends, I got family,
and especially in the year of our Lord 2025, where our communities are being shattered across, like social media platforms are being shut down, or we're losing like this communication. I feel like The Village is more relevant now than ever, where it's about establishing community and living with empathy and seeing each other who they are and seeing like their problems and understanding where people are coming from, because there are certain forces out there. I'm not going to mention those forces on this podcast because we've already went a little bit political. There's certain forces out there that are shattering. They're shattering like those, shattering those communities. And I'm not happy with that. And that's not to
try. They can try.
They can try
all they want. But I believe in humans. I believe in the resilience of humanity. Mm-hmm. And I believe in human dignity. And I think that the people, despite the intensely terrible forces that are enacting upon them, they will prevail to some extent.
Yeah. And
people who went through the Holocaust, they're still alive. Mm-hmm. They've prevailed despite the violence acted upon them. Mm-hmm. There are people who are having the same level of violence enacted upon them to this day in Africa, in the Middle East, and they will prevail. They're better human beings than me.
Yeah. And not to do like a shameless self-promotion for the podcast, but that's
really, go ahead.
That's really my whole entire goal with the Real Lovers podcast and The Lobby, like the two podcasts living amongst themselves, is that we're building a community here. We're building a community of film fans, film lovers that just love talking about movies. And I might have one take. You might have another take. I'm not going to say that your take is invalid, or you're not going to say my take is invalid or anything like that. Where it's all about conversation and coming together and understanding these movies that we love even better. But I don't want to go first on my promotion. Vikash, I love having these conversations with you, but where can they find you online?
Movies are not meant, or movies are empathy. That's what they've always been. Mm-hmm. We go and we practice empathy for 2-3 hours. And that empathy is something that we should translate to our worlds. Mm-hmm. And you can find me and the podcast, that Cinema Pursuit. Google it. You will find us. You'll have the links somewhere. We talk about the same level of stuff, maybe with just a little bit more like high, a little bit of games and like recasting mm-hmm. movies and talking about movies and movies that we love. Because I can't talk about anything else. I can't bear any ounce of my existence into saying, oh, this movie was bad, and this and that, and that negativity gets to you. So mm-hmm. we're at the same level of, we want to talk substantively. We want to have our opinions shared, but we want to have a community as to who we're talking to and have a conversation about movies, and especially the ones we love.
Yeah,
that's what Cinema Pursuit is, and I'm around. I'm on all of the social medias pretty much, even though yeah. I might leave them sometimes because, you know, they're not conducive to our mental health.
Yeah, I know exactly how you feel there, but everyone should go listen and subscribe to the Cinema Pursuit podcast. Listen to,
and Marley is on the podcast. He's on Tokyo Drift. He's on Dawn for the Planet of the Apes. And then Paddington is coming soon. So
coming soon.
Plenty of Marley.
Yeah.
Or it'll be out by the time, whatever we list. If you're listening to this, Paddington 2 is out.
Yeah.
And it is another movie in the same realm as The Village, as to like positivity. It's mm-hmm. the other half of this, where it's like a positive emotion will shift people. Yeah. You're not giving them the benefit of the doubt if you think that everything is dour in this world. There is mm-hmm. a positivity and love out there. And it yeah. all comes in the package of a little British Paddington bear.
And some marmalade, too. marmalade
some beautifully tasty marmalade.
Yeah. But yeah, all the links will be in the description box down below. Just if you love this podcast, you're going to love Cinema Pursuit Podcast. And yeah, you can follow me everywhere on social media if social media is still around and if I don't decide to delete it, with the username at Marley Loves Film. Most active places today are Instagram, Blue Sky, and YouTube. Blue Sky's popping off. I'm having a good time over there. There's some pretty chill people over there. The film community is really great. But Marley Loves Film across all platforms. I'll put all the links in the description box down below. Also, subscribe to the Real Lovers Podcast. If you love movies, but we're still going strong, going slow and strong on the Letterboxd Top 250 series.
I'll be back.
Yeah, Vikash will be back. I think you signed up for a few movies. I'm going to have to check that you have. But we're definitely going slow and steady on that series. But yeah, subscribe to the Real Lovers Podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. Also, if social media is too much for you, head on over to therealovers.com, where I'm writing articles about The Village, M. Night Shyamalan, just across all movies. This just the, I think, long form writing is going to come back in 2025, just because you can't necessarily get someone's thoughts on a movie in 240 characters. But head to therealovers.com to listen to the podcast there and read my writing over there. But yeah, we're done here. But next on our series for the M. Night Shyamalan retrospective series, Lady in the Water from 2006, written and directed and produced by M. Night Shyamalan. And starring Paul Giamatti.
My man, Paul Giamatti.
Yeah. So yeah, stay tuned for us next week as we explore that movie, Lady in the Water. But with that being said, my name is Marley Silverbrand for the Real Lovers Podcast. And
I'm Vikash from Cinema Pursuit. He will see you next time. I won't be here.
And let's get back to the movies. See you.